4.
Hi, this is Chloe Glickman, and I'm an intern at WBAI. Looking to get professional experience doing something you're actually passionate about? At WBAI, I'm able to develop skills in journalism, marketing, event planning, editing, social networking, and much more, all while working directly with producers and the management team. BAI is always taking applications for credit and non-credit internships, so get in touch today. Send an email to internships@wbai.org for more information. Join the team that supplied New York with independent radio for over 50 years. Help keep community radio going strong.
speak. Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun. I wait for you. Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
I'm very well, thank you, Kathy. How are you?
I'm great. And how are all of you tuned in this day to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org? And this is Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. And we are Catherine and Paulette. And we are here with you this morning, I should say. And happy to be here, I think. I am feeling in good spirits today, and that's always wonderful. Mm. How are you doing this day?
I'm in good spirits also.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's the autumn equinox, is it not? I think something... Well, maybe it's over now, but it was the last 2 days, the transition into autumn officially. And
wow.
So now the leaves start to turn beautiful colors, and it gets slightly colder as we move along. Though I'm enjoying this.
So am I. So fresh.
Fresh,
and refreshing.
Cool weather.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely environment to be in. And I don't know if it's age or if it's the age we're living in, but there's something nice about the air, especially at night. You know, it seems to cool down.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The environment. Are we on the air?
I hope so.
Well, Paulette is on the phone. I think I need to bring your voice down a little bit. How's that? Sounds better? Thank you. It's always nice to feel like you're being looked after.
Yes, it is.
That was Max, the engineer, and he's actually off duty at this moment, but he came in to check to make sure we're doing okay, and that's a lovely thing, like having a guardian angel. Max,
indeed.
The guardian angel.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, so it's like the weather's really great. Pretty much. And the sky is really beautiful. And I tend to wake up early because I don't know why. Maybe it's age. But I like to meditate in the morning because the world just seems so much more peaceful.
Hmm.
And lately I started getting up and going for walks in the early morning when it's still dark.
Wow.
And it's amazing to see the sky at that time of the morning. Because, if it's a clear sky, everything is so bright and beautiful, and you can see a lot of stars. Because by the time you get to, you know, after 2 o'clock, a lot of the big buildings go off. The Empire State Building goes off, and a lot of lights that would illuminate and make it harder to see the sky, at least in New York City. And so in the early morning, you can really see the stars, and I don't know if it's me or if there are more stars visible than before. And I have also wondered if I'm maybe looking at starships, and that's possible, because there's a lot in the sky right now. So it's really very, very beautiful that time of morning. So you should check it out. You don't have to go downstairs. You could look out your window. You have a really nice view.
Yeah.
But if you wake up 3, 4 in the morning, even 5, probably safer in most neighborhoods because people are up and starting to go to work and everything. But the sky is just so beautiful right before the sun rises. Mm. So it's, and the energy is very peaceful. It's very calm. There's not this hectic thing that tends to take place by the time 6 or 7 o'clock rolls around and people are, you hear people's footsteps clomping along, running to the subway, and everybody's rushing and hustling and bustling, and it's not peaceful as it is early morning.
Hmm.
So I recommend that. And sometimes I go to the park. This morning, I actually, after my walk, I came back to feed my cats, and then I went out to Prospect Park to meditate. And I do Qigong in the morning, and so it's so nice. The park, again, is also a very quiet and peaceful, and you can really feel this calming energy that comes from nature.
And how lovely.
I don't really think of the park as nature most of the time, but it really is nature. It's just cityfied, you know, in a way, because it's kind of a manicured environment. But the trees are real, the grass is real, the ground is real, and the energy that flows from it is also very real. So I recommend that people begin to do these things. Stare at the sky, at the stars. I actually am not very well educated on constellations. The only one I'm familiar with, really, is Orion, you know, with Orion's belt.
Mm-hmm.
So that one I was able to identify. The others I couldn't. But it's still wonderful just to see the stars so bright and the moon so luminous in the sky is pretty amazing as well. So, so that's what I've been up to, just enduring the natural world and paying attention to the underlying sort of presence in the world. There's a different feel to the world than I noticed, say 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. And a lot of people were talking about 2012 as being the great point of shifting into the new era. And I believe that some things did really change in the time period of 2012. And a lot of people listen to these stories about the shift of the ages and, you know, the new millennium and things turning around and the golden age. And on the other hand, you have people who are speaking of doom and gloom and are thinking that the world is going to end. And so there were all these stories around 2012. But what it really ended up being is really just a point in which certain eras and certain things shifted. But one of the things that did shift for sure was the energy that is emanating from the center of the cosmos. And I've spoken about it a great deal, but it's sometimes helpful to hear from people who are regarded as more scientifically astute than one who has basically a almost entirely spiritual perspective. So I have a little clip to share this evening, and then, you know, we could talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
And it is a clip by Greg Braden, and it's called The Shift of the Ages. It's only about 10 minutes. And this clip comes from Sounds True. So one could go to soundstrue.com. I mean, we use a lot of their material as premiums here on WBAI, but they have a lot of free stuff there. So you could go to their website and browse their shopping carts, but you look for their free downloads. They have free audio, they have free articles, they have free interviews. So there's a lot of resource there at Sounds True, and I enjoy it. And so this is a clip by Greg Braden, and he explores the potential for a dramatic shift in human consciousness that may already be well underway. And Greg discusses a universal impulse that he has found in the lives of people all over the world, the sense that something is awakening from deep within, that will radically change our view of the world and our roles in it. So this is for me a confirmation, affirmation of what I talk about often and interview guests about often. Greg Braden is actually an American author of New Age literature, but he is also, interestingly enough, a scientist. He's a 2015 Templeton Prize nominee, and he's very well renowned as a scientist, visionary, and scholar. And he has published, it looks like, some 24 books. So there's a lot of material out there that he produces and makes available to people. So we're going to play this piece by Greg Braden, and then we'll be back, and I'll be curious to see what you think of it. So
okay.
Stay tuned.
How many of you feel like something is happening now that perhaps is very unique, very different from what we've known in the past in our lives? Do you feel like something's about to happen? We have the rare opportunity, my wife and I, to journey throughout this country as well as the rest of the world. And we've found this phenomenon, this common thread that runs in the belief systems of people from the tiniest villages in the mountains of Peru to the small towns along the Nile in Egypt, into the monasteries at 15,000 feet in the Himalayan mountains, into the neighbors right next door to us in northern New Mexico. Everyone feels that something is different now, something big is about to happen. There are differences in terms of how they interpret that sense. For some of them, it's just this low-level anxiety. They feel like something is churning deep within, ancient memories coming forth. Many people feel that the lives they've created for themselves meticulously, the educational parameters, their vocations, their friends and support systems no longer make sense, and they're struggling to understand what that's all about. And for others, what they've found is something has awakened from deep within them. And in that awakening, they have taken on a new worldview of themselves and their relationship to one another in this time in history. Well, this is interesting because our own science now has begun to measure and document unprecedented phenomenon, many, many levels that we've never seen in recorded human, and in some cases even geologic history. Something is happening now, something unique. One of the reasons in the West that it may make little sense to us is because 1,700 years ago, something happened that forever changed the way that we view our relationship to one another and the creative forces of our world. 1,700 years ago, there were tremendous amounts of information taken from our documents, the history of our world, and from that time forward, we have interpreted what it is that we witness in our world, the phenomenon in our natural world and in our interpersonal relationships through the eyes of our direct experience. We lost the context, we lost the framework within which to place these experiences and these situations. As we are coming to the completion of this time in history, this grand cycle of experience, the close of this decade, the close of this century, the shift of the millennium, all this information now is coming back to us, and it's becoming much clearer why in the West we have witnessed and viewed with mystery so much of the phenomenon that we're seeing, while the rest of the world, their traditions and their belief systems, they not only allow for the kinds of changes we're seeing in our world, they expect it, and they know that it's part of something even greater. I'd like to share with you some of the information as our own science is witnessing unprecedented phenomenon. Things are happening now we've never seen before. They're a mystery to the West because we lost the context. In other traditions, not only do these events make sense, they indicate that there's a timetable unfolding and that this timetable is intact as we are converging on this point in history. The ancients called the shift of the ages. Our own science now, within the last few years, in 1991, I'll share a little story with you. It sounds almost like the plot of a science fiction movie that we saw recently, and maybe this is where these plots come from. In 1991, from the center of our own Milky Way galaxy, through an array of telescopes in Socorro, New Mexico, in northern New Mexico, one evening they picked up a signal coming from space that we'd never heard before. And it was a signal that was coming from the center of our Milky Way galaxy. That signal continues to this day. Researchers, it's a mystery. They say, why is this happening now? The University of Albuquerque is where they first began sharing the information. And what they actually said was that a source of fluctuating radio frequency emission suddenly appeared near the center of our Milky Way, has astronomers baffled. So they're still investigating this today. Why did that happen in 1991? Earth now is being bathed in a radio frequency signal that we've never seen before. What does that mean, and why is it happening now? Throughout our solar system, we are witnessing phenomenon unprecedented in modern physics and modern astronomy. Things are happening in the outer planets our physics really doesn't account for. For example, our sun is cooling down on the one hand, and on the other hand, the temperatures inside of the outer planets is increasing. If their heat source is the radiant energy from our sun and our sun's cooling, our physics doesn't allow for these planets to heat up while the sun's cooling down. What's happening? Why is that happening now? Our own sun has been the source of a lot of controversy. The tech journals now, if you're following the tech journals, have a tremendous amount of information that has not made it into mainstream publications such as Time Magazine maybe, or Look, or Newsweek. Amazing phenomena occurring on our sun. We really began to see some of these phenomena in 1996. We sent a spacecraft, it was called the Ulysses spacecraft, to the sun to document what we believed were the magnetic fields of the sun at that time. It took a few months to get there. In late 1996, what Ulysses said to us, the signals that it sent back, it said that the magnetic fields of the South Pole were almost non-existent. They were barely discernible. A few months later, Ulysses went to the equator and found that the measurements of magnetics at the equator were the same as they were at the South Pole. In early 97, at the North Pole of the Sun, Ulysses found the same thing. What had happened is that the composite magnetics of the Sun have dropped to such a low level, there really is no North or South Pole on the Sun any longer, and researchers essentially say that the magnetic field of the Sun now is null. We have many small magnetic fields throughout the sun rather than one global north and south in the sun. Why is this happening now? Why aren't we hearing more about it? The solar flares in our sun, we're seeing unprecedented levels of solar flares. And some of this data is so new. I'd like to just update you and share with you some of this information. Beginning in 1989, we began seeing solar flares on the sun that we'd never seen before, from the Solar Max satellite. And what was happening was we saw the largest solar flares ever observed. The satellite's hard X-ray burst spectrometer recorded 447 hard X-ray flares, a rate of about 32 per day. We used to see maybe 32 in a 30-day period. Well, there is a parameter called PFU, proton flux units. This is a measure of energy coming from the sun 93 million miles across space to Earth. It's just a measure of that energy. And the proton flux units are being measured on levels of magnitudes greater than anything we've ever seen before. And I'd just like to share some of these with you. Back in 1975, 1976, proton flux units were measured at around 12 proton flux units, something like that, 12, 20, somewhere in that magnitude. And that was the average for that time. In 1978, something happened, and those numbers increased to between 1,000 and 2,200. 1982, we saw 2,900. In 1989, something happened that sent these scales right off of the charts. We went from 22 and 2900 proton flux units to over 40,000. And then later in 1993, 43,000 proton flux units. What in the world is going on? In 1998, June and early July, something happened we've never seen before. Two comets struck our sun at the same time. And they began creating solar events at the rate exceeding anything that we'd seen before in terms of the number of flares per day, 40, 45, 50 flares per day. We've never seen that. And it's very interesting, as we download this information from the research facilities, they are sharing the information all the way up to May of 1998. It's conspicuously absent for June and July during these solar events. They're still working through the data, and then they pick it up again in August. And in August of this year, we're back very close to where we have been in the past. The sun is going through a solar cycle, apparently, that lasts 11 years, and we're in the 10th year. That solar cycle will culminate in the year 2000. Very interesting, along with many of the other phenomena that are converging on this point.
There we go. That was Greg Braden. Mm-hmm. So obviously this was a piece that was recorded quite some time ago.
Yeah.
But I found it really interesting that he was talking about phenomena that's taking place in the cosmos rather than, attributing everything to some kind of airy, fairy, spirituality thing. And it's what makes his work very interesting, because he equates it with science. And so anyone who is interested in finding out more about the work of Greg Braden, they can go to his website. His last name is spelled B-R-A-D-E-N. So it's gregbraden.com, GREGGBRADEN.com, gregbraden.com. And so, so that was just a little piece I thought was kind of interesting, because it talks about what's happening in the solar system and relates that to what's happening to us on a conscious level.
Actually, it very much reminds me of the original thinking behind the show Earth Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very similar in approach, in that with, I think, Robert's view of what he coined as the term biomorphic cosmology,
mm-hmm.
that the cosmos is a living system. And he would, and from what I would listen to the show, he would talk about how the planet, the gravitational pull of the planets actually pull on the sun and causes it to wobble, and it's called a barycenter.
Mm-hmm.
So the sun itself is not just a fixed mass, and it reacts as well to the forces that are pulling on it,
mm-hmm.
and that radiation, of course, affects us on the planet as people.
Yeah.
And I think it's all very interesting. It's really the concept that we are a living system within a much larger living system.
Yeah. And so it's interesting that you can look upon it as, from a spiritual perspective, which I have a tendency to do, or you can look at it from the perspective of the science of existence, and this is simply what is real. And so it's I find it very interesting, because I am one who considers everything to be alive on some level. So even those things that one would consider to be inanimate objects, like a rock or a leaf, however you think of it, to me has life and consciousness on its level and has energy. So when I touch a tree, I can feel the energy of that tree. And trees are very different from each other. They have different energies, and depending on their environment and how they're cared for. But they really do have a vibration that you can connect with on a conscious level, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like I was speaking of this morning, that there's this real calming sensation that comes from nature. And people have experienced it, you know, even if we don't explain it in the same way. I think of it as a vibration. But when you sit next to the water, you know, listening to the waves lapping against the shore or something, that's very calming to us as human beings. Mm. And I believe that there's a subtle communication that goes on between everything and everyone. And we're all interdependent, and we respond to each other and react to each other. And from my perspective, one of the reasons we're having so much violent weather and violent events is not because of some strange shift of the ages. I believe it's because we've damaged the planet so deeply that we're seeing the effects of that. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that violence is something that's picked up by the environment. So when you see a violent storm, in some manner, it's a consequence of the violence that's being displayed on the planet, either human to human, human to animal, human to earth. But mostly it's violence that is been created on the planet that makes the earth so turbulent. From my perspective, I think that that's what's happening.
Hmm. Yeah, I've always seen nature as I want to use the word corrective, but it always seems to try to balance itself out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes humans get hurt in the process. And I mean, I this is not a scientific view; it's just a sense of how nature behaves. Whether it's in dust storms, you know, or any way that it tries to create its own balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important, as you're implying, to realize that we're all part of nature on a very basic level.
Yeah, I agree. And from my perspective, when we look at it on the level of spirituality, I see everything as being a representation of that creative force. So, you know, like the indigenous people of the world have a tendency to honor nature, to honor the animals, to recognize that they have a consciousness and a relationship, and that there is an interplay in the relationship on the planet between humans and the environment and the animals. And so I think part of the difficulties we are having in the world have more to do with the imbalance that has been created by humanity on the planet.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah. So that leaves us with the responsibility of changing that. So I'm hoping that that's what we can actually come to grips with. So it's an interesting time. We have a visit from the Pope.
Hmm.
And this is one of the few popes that I actually have liked, Pope okay. Francis. He does remind me of his namesake, St. Francis of Assisi.
Hmm. What do you like about him?
About the Pope?
Yeah.
First of all, I like that he doesn't wear red.
Okay.
Because what's going on in the Catholic Church is a long history of bloodlust, power and control. And you'll notice most of the popes wear red. And he came, when he first came in, he came in with the idea that he wasn't going to be party to the legacy of sort of the bloodlust of the church, the domination and control of the church. I'm not saying he's going to change anything, but his choice of dress color was to not identify with that, the blood of Christ, such as it is. And so I like that about him. Plus, he's actually made a lot of statements that are very compatible with respecting and feeding the hungry, respecting the earth, respecting the food chain. So he really speaks about getting back on track. I mean, it's rhetoric, but it's good rhetoric. Hmm. And also he brought the Holy See to task. Now, the Holy See is the aspect of the Vatican. It's sort of like the Supreme Court of the Vatican, if you would think of it that way. They are the ones that make the laws, the canonical laws, I think that's how you say it, that are supposed to govern the church and all that the church controls. And so, but it's a very corrupt body because they have created these, they're the ones that created the Crusades, that gave power to certain European kingdoms to abolish peoples of other cultures and races. So the Catholic Church has a very bloody history. And so this Pope Francis has been slowly bringing people to task within his environment, which a lot of people don't think it matters, because who cares about the Catholic Church? But the truth of it is, I was watching a documentary in which it traces the papal bulls, or the decrees of the Pope and the Catholic Church that conveyed power to certain royalty kingdoms to colonize, to go out and Christianize the world. And so it was completely okay with them to create mayhem and destroy across the globe. And so if you look at the so-called 1%, whatever race or religion they may be, you can trace that 1% back to the to these decrees of the church giving power to certain families. Hmm. You see what I'm saying? And so the church... Wow, thanks, Sally. Sally O'Brien is here. She brought me a feast. Thank you, Sally. And so what happens is that so these decrees that created the Crusades, that gave these kings the right to come to Africa and to the Americas and claim it as property of these kingdoms or these monarchs. And so what happened is the decrees of the church, the papal bull, gave ownership of foreign lands to these monarchs. But what happened is when there were revolutions, like the American Revolution all through Africa and Central South America, what happened is that they created a situation where the United States of America became not so much free of what the papal document said, they became the new owners. And so basically what happened is that the ownership was transferred from the monarchs of Europe to the aristocratic class in America. But they were based on the same papal bull documents. Bulla is the name, which is means bull in Latin. But they were decrees that gave ownership of domination to the first European kingdoms or whatever, fiefdoms. And then that ownership was transferred to the American government, the aristocratic class. That's why they could continue to have slaves and why they continued to move across the Americas and destroy the Indians, because they were still operating under the same legal system. And what they did is they began to call these founding laws that came from the church, you know, they became like the constitutional, not constitutional is not the word, the organic law. So most of American laws are based on organic law, the organic law which comes from the papal decrees. So all of the times that they were, that they moved across the United States and they were breaking treaties and destroying indigenous tribes, and they did the same thing in Africa to the indigenous people there, all of that was based on the papal decrees. And so it didn't matter who was doing it, because they just kept transferring it. And so the Supreme Court, even to this day, makes the decisions. So when they decide to go into indigenous land, sacred land, and say, well, we're going to give this land over because there's coal or there's oil and we're just going to take it, all of this is happening even now in the Supreme Court, because they do things based on precedents. So they look back at all the decisions that were made in history. And so we're continuing to be governed by these original documents that came out of the papacy in the 16th, 17th, and 1800s. Our laws are still based on that. And so when you have wonder, how is it that police can have situations where they can execute brutality against a citizen, it's because there are these organic laws that underlie our laws that allows governmental bodies to make decisions based on precedent. And that precedent, if you trace it all the way back, goes to the Vatican. So, long story. But the bottom line is, there needs to be some challenge to these original laws that all the governing laws are based on. And so even though people think that the Vatican is irrelevant, it's very relevant, because most of the patterns of enslaving, of dominance, of brutality, of control, of mind control, you know, damaging the earth. It all goes back to the documents that come from out of the Catholic Church, out of the papacy, that give permission as if it comes from God and or herself, well, himself, obviously, if it's Catholic Church. But saying that man has a right to dominate the earth and the beasts of the earth. I don't remember the scriptures, but it's there. And so what happens is that these monarchs went across the world saying, oh, you're not baptized? Then you're a beast. So that means we can dominate you. And so that's how this whole cycle of domination and genocide was created, originated in the papacy of the early centuries of our times. And so to have a pope come around to begin on any level to challenge that, I think is worthwhile.
Wow.
Long story, right? but that's the truth. That's the world that we're living in. We're living in a world in which we are not sovereign. The sovereignty has been given over to these governmental structures. You know, they gave citizenship to corporations, and corporations have more rights than human beings. And then they come in with all these trade agreements, which take away whatever semblance of rights we have as nations. or as communities. And so there's this erosion of human rights and of human sovereignty that's taking place in the world, and it's the basis of this domination that created the original crusades, the original witch burnings, and which was the destruction of the feminine principles and feminine divinity and subjugation of women, giving the men control, and so it just rolled on and on and on. But this came out of the papacy. So it's a very powerful organization still. And it's probably the richest organization on the planet. And it has empowered the so-called 1% at the origin with these decrees and with treaties, giving them the rights over anyone who was not baptized into the Catholic Church. And the way they looked at people of color or of any race, or even if you're just a woman of any race, that you're a beast, you're not entitled to that which would entitle you according to the principles of Christianity. Only these elite male persons had any liberties according to the early Catholic Church. And it was enforced with death.
Yes, I remember many, many moons ago, I studied the history of Peru and the conquest of Peru and how all of that happened with Pizarro and the Spaniards and insisting that certain people didn't have souls or that they had to be baptized, and what a very bloody exchange it was with the full, fledged civilization there. Mm-hmm. And the attempts of the people indigenous to those lands to negotiate with the European visitors. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember all the details of what I studied, but I do remember how very violent it was.
Yeah, and this happened. It happened systematically across the globe.
Sure.
In order to create this domination system that we're living under right now.
Yeah.
And so I've been researching this because my goal is to create a, I don't know if it would be a petition of sorts, but some kind of documentation that really shows the legacy of the laws that we're living under now and how they trace back to these early times. But even though it doesn't seem like the Catholic Church and these laws are relevant, they are relevant because they're still being used in the court systems. And we wonder, how is it that these cops keep getting off, or how is it that these corporations can do what they're doing and destroying the planet, and people are out protesting all across the globe wanting to stop war, and how is it that there's no power in the hands of human beings? We're the majority, and we're as divinely sovereign as any being who claims to be in charge. And so I'm looking at this too, because I think once people have the awareness, the consciousness of what's really been going on, and the reason I'm doing the research is to document it so that there's not this claim of conspiracy. And we can just look at it for what it is. I'm not asking for retribution. I'm not asking for anger or even to say anything bad about the church. It's just looking at the true historical record so that perhaps we can go into court with the historical record and begin to challenge these laws on the legal basis. And so the reason I am happy about Pope Francis at least speaking out for justice, you know, and respect for humanity and respect for the planet, is because if enough people become informed, then perhaps he can be in some way persuaded to reveal publicly the truth of what this is. Because part of the problem is that people don't recognize or understand how this situation has arisen and don't know how to defend it. But I think we can go into the Supreme Court and make some challenges, just like in the civil rights era, when certain laws needed to be challenged as being against humanity. I think we need to start arguing for the planet on that level, and arguing for cultural rights and human rights on that basis. If we look at all of the immigration laws, I mean, all the controversy over immigration, what are we talking about here? This is not America. If you really want to look at it, we're in Mexico. We're the ones that first violated immigration. We moved across the country, not we, America, such as it is, took this land from people, and now we're looking at them as immigrants. It's kind of crazy. So I just think that if we can really examine the history and document it so that we can be awake to the reality of what has taken place, then perhaps it won't be so easy for the nonsense to be propelled into the public discourse, and we can answer it in the public discourse, but also legally in the court system, and say, wait a minute, how many times has the United States of America violated a treaty? You could probably find millions of them, you know, and that's got to be true of Canada and Central South America. You know, how many violations of human rights are... So I really think instead of, you know, this nonsense that we see with the political parties, with, you know, the big mouths and the, you know, the back and forth and the mainstream media that just plays that game, it's all about keeping people confused and dumbed down and not knowing what's going on. So I want to really document it so people can see the history of why the world is the way it is, because we have a responsibility to turn it around. That's what I think. You know.
That's going to be some piece of work.
Yeah, it is a piece of work. But you know, that's where my imagination has taken me, based on some of the documentaries I've seen, based on my own curiosity and research, and a lot of these documents are not that easy to find, because they only want you to see the nice stuff. They don't want you to see the true heinous things that have taken place. We know it, but they don't want the documentation to be there. So it requires some research, but I'm working on it.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So anyway, so I do like Pope Francis, because he seems reasonably astute. In one sense, it's a little bit like Obama. You know, we all thought Obama was going to be very capable of challenging the system. But he was not able to, even if he desired to. I'm not sure what the state of his mind is, or his thinking, or his politics. I presume he's doing the best he can, whatever that means. But people had high hopes, and many were disappointed with what he was able to accomplish. A lot of people are in love with him. You know, they think he's doing great. So I don't really expect anything so much of the Pope. But it does make a difference when one of these leaders brings these questions into the public discourse. I think Obama did that, as well as Pope Francis is doing that. It brings a discussion into the discourse that wasn't there before. And the thing about Obama, I actually had a discussion with someone, because I was speaking out in disappointment about him, and they were like, why? I said, well, because he didn't do anything he promised. And one of the people in our group, I was actually doing a Qigong class this past Saturday, and we were just you know, sitting around shooting the breeze afterwards. And one of the women said, well, Obama did two things that were important. He was elected, and he managed to stay alive. And I can understand that perspective, because I think a lot of us thought he might not have survived the presidency. So, who knows? Only time will tell.
But then there are all those other little things that happen.
That he's doing, like the trade agreements and the bombing and the drones.
A whole lot of other things.
There's a whole lot of stuff that are not too cool.
Yeah, and I always think about that biblical commandment, thou shalt not kill. And so I guess I'm not very kind when it comes to thinking about him and comparing his words to his actions.
That's what I was expressing. But this is what a lot of people, you know, different people have different perspectives. On the one hand, I do think he has been unduly attacked by the right. This constant, you know, attacking of him on, you know, basic personal issues. Not even the politics, it's, you know, personal attacks. And I don't really have much respect for that either. But I just think that he is a product of the system. You know, we have a system in which a person cannot be president, as far as I can see, without selling out. That's how you get to be president. If you don't sell out, you don't get there on some level. And so I could see where maybe he thought he can walk some kind of middle path. It didn't work. But I don't hate the guy. I don't think he's been all that successful a president, in the sense that, you know, he's been so compromised. But the other side of the story for me is what we don't have. So, for instance, had he not won, isn't it possible, much more possible, that we would have been in, like, a nuclear war by now?
I don't know, but, I mean, what I do see is that suddenly we were in a pseudo-Cold War with Russia again. And, I mean, it's not something that I thought I'd ever see in my lifetime. And, you know, I don't think anyone can blame George Bush for that one, but I mean, I just look at the things that have evolved over the last almost 8 years, and
it hasn't been good. It's not a good situation.
No, it doesn't. I'm not very sort of kindly disposed towards him. I think that if you have I see the point that once you're in that position, you know, all sorts of things come out of the woodwork at you. But I also think that you're still the chief of the head of state. Mm-hmm. I don't end up making a lot of excuses for certain things that have happened.
Right.
And I'm not expecting anyone to walk on water, but it kind of grates on me where someone uses certain language to get you to fall in love with them, and then the moment they get what they want, they turn into another person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I don't disagree with you. You know, I'm just trying to find a balance in the overall picture. But yeah. Anyway, so Pope Francis, I'm looking on my Facebook page, and someone just shared a story with me. This is one of the reasons people like the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
He rejects lunch with Boehner, Pelosi, McConnell, and Reid, and he decided to dine with the homeless.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's a small thing, mm-hmm. but it really brings home a point that he's not here to play that game. So we'll see. Maybe,
we'll
you know,
see.
Maybe he'll be able to make a difference. I hope so.
I do too.
On some level.
I do too. I think we need to have genuine leaders. And sometimes in my mind, the people who lead are usually the most quiet, and they don't have to have a lot of, you know, pomp and ceremony, you know, but mm-hmm. they can do things quite discreetly. And I tend to think that the people that do that they come across as being the most sincere.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we are hopeful. Well, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, that I am hopeful, too, in my own way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I think I really do believe that we have. It's really not any leader is not going to be the one to change this if we as a human collective don't wake up and demand and make changes ourselves. So, I mean, I remember one of the things I do remember about Obama when he made his acceptance speech was that you have to be here. You have to keep me on track or whatever. Some nonsense.
Just as long as you're not a journalist.
but I remember how it struck me that after he was elected, it's almost as if people went back to sleep.
Yes.
Nobody paid any more attention. Nobody was willing to call him to task. Like you said, everybody wanted to make an excuse.
Right.
You know, he's our first black president. We got to give him a break, blah, blah, blah. So I think that people needed to hold his feet to the fire.
Absolutely.
And the fact that we didn't, as a collective American humanity, is why part of why he's so far off track. Because we went back to sleep as a, you know.
Yeah, and basically he said, now you can go back to sleep, and everyone said, okay. and they did. And, you know, afterwards all these things started happening, and, you know, promises to give your Social Security away throw it in the garbage. You know, all this stuff was done, and people mm-hmm. are standing there saying how wonderful he looks and mm-hmm. what a wonderful voice and wonderful delivery and great speechwriter.
Yeah.
They weren't looking at what he was doing. And you know, you can be mesmerized, but for so long.
Yeah.
And the people who came out and said things were told that they're this, that, and the other, you know, they're anti this, they're, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a real lesson in not so much closing your eyes, but really understanding that actions do speak much louder than words, especially at that level. And
yeah.
I think students of history.
That I don't think we can depend on a politician.
He's part of a much larger system, and systems that at least I'm certainly not completely aware of. I'm just learning about just the tip of these things, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, so I have a whole lot to learn, but I guess it's for me just getting the sense that someone is in their own right some sort of Santa Claus kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, yeah, I think that's the problem with politics in general.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
simply the problem with politics.
Yeah.
So let me remind people you're listening to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis, and I'm joined by a co-host, Paulette Spencer. And we're hoping one day soon we'll have phones so you can join in on this banter and conversation. I'm sure you have a lot to say, but you could always communicate. There are ways to do that. You can communicate. If you connect with us through the Facebook, you know, we could chat live, actually. Or perhaps we'll be setting up a Twitter or something so that you can send in questions live or comments live. You know, I really just miss that interaction with our listeners, because you always have something interesting to say, a perspective that's fresh. And so we missed that. You could always also email us, and we could read your emails. The email for myself, I'm Catherine, is heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And Paulette, your email?
My email is thenightreport@gmail.com.
There you go. K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yes.
And so you can connect with us, and we can find ways to communicate back and forth. Actually, we're going to be going into Fun Drive very soon. So, you know, when you hear me talking about documentaries, you should know that I'm screening stuff. So we should have some really, really interesting stuff to offer you as enticements this drive. And hopefully you will be motivated to support WBAI, because you're not going to hear this very many other places. Now, tune into...
That's the beauty of the station.
Yeah, tune into CNN. Tune into Fox. And look for a program where you're going to see two black women talking to each other about politics. And not dissing the church, dissing Obama, and anyone else we want to. You're only going to find that on WBAI, I promise you. I promise you. Well, or a Pacifica station. So, I mean, it may not be to everyone's liking. I'm not suggesting that it is. But it's going to, you find things here that are different. So it's worth your support.
And no one's going to, no one will take us off the air for
having an opinion.
Exactly.
Or speaking up against or for something.
Yeah.
Yes, that is so true. There are only a few things we can't do, including the 7 dirty words.
Right.
Which I won't say for people, because then, hey. and the other thing, I believe, is like endorsing candidates. We're not allowed to endorse candidates on public radio. Mm-hmm. So if you were to invite one candidate, you would need to invite them all.
Mm-hmm.
I have found that that's not a problem, because most of the candidates that I don't want to interview don't want to be here. So it usually works out.
Win-win.
So we invite them, and they're like, we aren't interested in your little crazy station. And we get to talk to all the folk who have something cool to say. So it works out in the end. So we invite everybody and end up with who has something at least constructive and interesting to say. So it's interesting times. So I'm going to break this up with a little bit of music.
Okay.
And then we'll be back for some closing thoughts as we prepare for our next program. So hold on, we're going to play Are You Dreaming? All of you out there, are you awake or are you dreaming? hope that woke everyone up. That was from a compilation CD, One at Last, Are You Dreaming? I guess you should be dancing to that music, really. Anyway, so yeah, I think it's important to be awake and to be conscious within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out talking about the Great Shift. And so from my perspective, the Great Shift is really an internal shift more than anything. So all of this cosmic light, you know, Greg Braden was talking about this happening in the 90s, starting in the 90s, all these changes in the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the beginning of it. And that was when real weirdness started to happen in our world. Well, from my perspective, a lot of weirdness started happening. And it's culminating now with this whole breaking down of all the systems. If you look at the Maya, that's what their predictions have been about. It's been about breaking down all these systems so that something new can be created. The only thing is, the only way something new is going to be created is if we create it. So that's probably one of my hopes, that we really will be able to do that. And so that's why I'm researching the Vatican. Well, that's my little thing. That's my way of doing it. So hopefully.
Well, despite what I say, but I guess my message is that I very much believe in the power of people, and I very much believe in the power of community. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that knowledge is power, and that that the people who are the most knowledgeable, truly knowledgeable and conscious, have an enormous responsibility for having a certain amount of integrity.
Yeah.
And without that, we're in a lot of trouble. But I certainly am a believer that collectively in our human family has far more in common with each other than we differ.
Yeah.
And we all want to thrive and sustain life and to be productive no matter where we are on the planet. And I think it's important not ever to lose sight of that.
Yeah, that is the truth. We're all very much alike. As mm-hmm. human beings, we all desire the same thing.
Right.
We all have the same needs. They're very basic, you know, human needs. So why mm-hmm. not respect that and understand
Absolutely.
that's really what everyone is seeking?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think most people do recognize that. And one thing I do believe, whatever a person's politics, whatever their religion, whatever their belief system of right and wrong, people just basically want to be happy. They want to
sure.
be happy. They want to be at peace. They want to be able to live in a way that is sustaining and have the freedom to contemplate and to be creative. That's what people want. And so there's no difference, no matter what language we speak or how we look. That's what we want. We want freedom. And we want peace, and we want to be happy. And if we recognize that, and I think most do recognize it, it just becomes a question, well, just, it's a big deal, but of wrestling the power out of the hands of the few. And I don't think it needs to be a hand wrestling, but it is something that is dependent upon knowledge, understanding, and having an open mind?
Certainly. And I read a bit of I think I was reading an article today by Ray McGovern, and there was a section of it where it was an article actually on the Pope's visit, mm-hmm. and the issue of the right to life. And his part of his point was that it's important to look beyond just the 9 months of gestation and realize that the right to life extends well beyond that.
Well, this is part of the problem with the whole Christian right political perspective. They don't consider anything beyond that. They don't look at the ethics of
starving people
to death and bombing people or burning them alive and
yeah.
or waterboarding. They don't have a problem with any of that.
Yeah.
How many people are killed or how many children live in poverty who starve to death. That doesn't matter. Yeah. It's only up until the point of birth that they're concerned. So what is that really? It's all about control. It has nothing to do with right to life, because life is a full expression of a being. It's not just being born, it's being alive.
Right.
It's like going through your life. And if you are, I certainly know that is the current position of the church.
Hmm.
But at least I see from this Francis guy that he's at least endeavoring to care about people once they're born. So,
yeah.
But, you know, and I have a mixed perspective. I mean, because I see the whole PR campaign he's running, which is nice. I really appreciate that. But I also know that the Vatican has more money than God, okay? So they have all the money in the world is in the Vatican. They control so much wealth. They could actually feed everybody. So there's a little bit of a disconnect between the rhetoric and the reality. I recognize that much, because the Vatican has a lot of cash, lots and lots of gold and wealth and all kinds of resources that if they alone could feed every hungry human being for life, they have a lot of money. So do you think on a certain level
that the Vatican functions as a sort of monarchy?
Of the globe, yes. I know people have ignored the Catholic Church for generations, but they are actually in control. They control government. Always have, since they came into power. You know, and the Pope is like the front guy, like the president is the front guy, not really the one in control so much. But this Pope seems to be having a little bit more control in that he's holding his underlings, such as they are, responsible and accountable in a way that no other Pope has.
That's extremely important.
Yeah. So I think that's good, but it remains to be seen. But I know the truth of it. The truth of it is, you know, it's at least 75% rhetoric. I don't see the action behind the rhetoric. You know, it's good to have a feel good, I love you, great guy Pope who supports everyone in the world by talking about it. I'd like to see him do something.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, it always is.
People who
have power and wealth are not so willing to do something, but I think it's necessary.
And I remember a gazillion years ago when I was studying anthropology, I thought I wanted to study anthropology as an undergrad, as a major, and I would take a lot of anthro courses, and I took a class, I think it was a basic course, and they made the point that the organized religion is actually a reflection of the way humans organize themselves in a secular way, where you have this hierarchy within, and they use the Catholic Church as an example.
Well, because the Catholic Church probably wrote that script. But humanity didn't begin as a hierarchy. It was very different before the Catholic Church came around and killed everybody. Well, yeah. You know, they didn't kill, you know, they parceled it out to the Crusaders to go off and kill people. And, you know, they had the bishops who did the witch burnings and the Inquisitions. So, you know, they could claim, you know, they parsed it out. But it was, that's the origin of it. And before that, it wasn't like that. Before that, you're talking about the wisdom of the pyramids and Stonehenge and people who had a different spiritual understanding of reality, who were operating according to divine laws, but they were of a more pure essence than what came afterwards. Because when you look at, when you really look at the research and you look at this guy that they named Jesus Christ, because obviously that wasn't his real name, where did that come from? That existed before that man allegedly born and lived. I'm not saying that he didn't. He probably did. And he probably was a great guy and he taught all this stuff. And all that's great. But it's really a symbol. Christ is a symbol of a consciousness level to which anyone can attain. And that's kind of what he taught. You know, you can do more than I. So he was this guy teaching everybody that you can attain this level of Christhood, or, you know, the Buddha is Buddhahood. Whatever it is, whatever religion, it's all about the individual attaining their full divine expression in reality. And so along come these people who hijacked that idea and twisted it and came up with this churchhood, I guess Catholic Church is what it started out as, and pretty much perverted the original message and turned it into a application of domination and power, acquisition of wealth. That's not about Christianity, that's not about God, that's not spirituality. It's a political state, the Vatican. Always has been.
Certainly, and I guess in my own sort of rebelliousness as a teenager, I think I might have kind of gotten that feeling from it. And although my mother swore I'd burn in hell after I left the Catholic Church, I kind of decided that, you know, I was the person who had to decide what my sense of being ethical was. Or my own personal sense of morality, and that's what I would have to live with.
Yeah. We have similar histories in that regard. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I left the Catholic Church when I was 9. So,
wow.
yeah,
it
didn't
like
take 13, long.
14.
Yeah, well, it's all the same, really. It didn't take that long for me to understand that there was a problem with the system. And only for me it was like that because I was born a spiritual child. I was born, you know, talking to angels and you know, so I had a very esoteric worldview as a small child. And so when I got into the Catholic Church and they were like, no, you can't do that. You have to talk to a priest. I'm like, what? And then it was like, not only do you talk to a priest, you have to confess your sins. I'm like, what? You know, I'm 7. How many sins could I possibly have? I didn't do anything. I didn't know anything. And yeah. So it just the ridiculousness of it and the kind of cruelty of church and the system of, you know, dominance, control. And the thing that really got it for me is because I went into the church with the intent of becoming a priest.
Really?
Yeah. When I was like in five years old, I was like, I'm going to be a priest.
Wow.
And my father was like, no, you can't be a priest. Well, I'm like, well, why not? Apparently, maybe I've been a priestess in a former life. I don't know. I thought that was my calling, to be a priest.
My goodness.
And it was like, you can't be a priest. I was like, why not? Well, women can't be priests. So that was my first indication that something was wrong. What do you mean women can't be priests? You know, he was like, no, women are nuns. So I was like, well, what's a nun? And so, you know, because when you're little, you don't even know what these things are. So I had assumed a nun was a female priest. So I figured, okay, a priest, a nun, it's all the same.
Okay.
And then I get to like religious instruction and start looking at it. I'm like, wait a minute, there's a divide here of responsibilities. And a nun is here serving a priest. So I was like to my father, well, why is a nun, you know, why isn't a nun like a priest? Oh, no, no, a nun is the bride of Christ.
Exactly.
And I was like, the bride of Christ? Well, I liked Jesus Christ at the time. I was like so enchanted with these stories. I believed every word. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I could live with being the bride of Christ. And so I said, okay, I'm going to be a nun, and I'm going to have Jesus' baby. telling my people that I was going to have Jesus' baby, because I was a bride of Christ. I figured, what the hell? I was going to have his baby.
Wow.
And my father was like, you can't have them.
Just like, how did that message get lost on you? Like, no, like, you can't have Christ's child.
And so my father was like, you can't do that. Jesus is in heaven. And I'm like, you know, so, you know, I read my gospel stories at that point.
God.
I'm like, well, wait a minute. Isn't that what Mary did? And so I was like, I thought everybody could do that.
Oh, boy. Wow.
So I was a very confused child, but I wasn't that confused because by the time I was 9, I was through.
Wow. Yeah, I think with me, I grew up, well, actually studying, you know, every Sunday, and this is where I learned how to at least try to speak before the public. I used to read the scriptures to the parish every Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah, and my first music lessons when I was 6 was with a nun, and after the mass, my mother and I would go and have breakfast with the priests and the nuns in the convent, and then at that time the Catholic Church was shifting. There were a lot of priests and nuns who were leaving the church, but remained within the circle as lay people. And I went to school during that shift within the institution.
We'll have to pick it up. I spoke too much because we're actually out of time.
Oh, well, this has been real.
Yeah, so, no, but it's fine. We'll pick it up again. And tell you what, guys who are listening, send us some emails telling us your earliest remembrances and relationships to spirituality and notions of God. All right, we're going to take off. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf. Bye-bye, Paulette.
Bye, Kathy.
Ooh. good morning.
This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly, well, usually weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us, Richard Bowes. I think I'm on. This is apparently something that I've heard any number of BAI people complain about. By the way, on the air. Hi, Sally. Hi, Catherine. But it's the good night people, you know. Not the good night people, but...
Good night.
The good night people, yes, night but the people who work here at night, who are good. And no pun on, like, he who was in this time slot, Robert Knight, you know, it was a good night. Yeah, he was excellent.
He was wonderful.
But anyway, what was I going to mention before we started the show proper? Oh, yes, I was, can you hear yourself? Catherine, through these headphones, I don't really hear me much.
You have to turn it on.
On this device, yes.
Okay.
Actually, over here.
No. Let me know when you.
Can you hear yourself?
Okay, one, two, and through the Vorpal Sword. No, yeah, I thought it was turned all the way up. No, I mean, only barely. More ambient noise than anything else. I hear Rick, talk into your microphone.
I am speaking into my microphone.
Yeah, okay, I've got the wrong mic potted up. Try that again.
I am speaking.
Ah, now I can hear you. At least I can hear him.
Not you?
No, I never can. I've heard other people complain on the air about that.
Yeah, this mic is much softer.
Yeah.
Take your pot up.
Yes, I will.
Romantic world of radio.
Better. Better. Yes. Yes, we're live. Of course we're live. Yes.
Jeez.
Watch it.
I said cheese.
Oh, you want cheese?
No. My goodness.
When have I... Yeah, I mean, this is nothing. When Max is around, it gets really bad with me just... mouthing off about nothing in particular. At any rate, let me also move this monitor so I can see my guest. Hi, Rick.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well.
Nice to see you here.
Thank you. So, announcements. Yes, 388 Atlantic Avenue. It's not only where we are now, but it's where the next... reading will be for the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, and that will be on October 6th. And our readers will be Matthew Kressel, who is, if you were listening to Ellen Datlow last week, it was a real good show, by the way. He co-hosts the KGB Fantastic Fiction reading series with her, and his first novel, Shards, Ark of Shards.
World of Shards.
World of Shards. I'm sorry, I should have printed this out and brought it with me. And, of course, the computer that I have in front of me isn't on the internet. So, you know, that this is typical. I could take my phone out and probably get it from that and probably have Matt texting me right now. But it's World of Shards. Matt Kressel is a fine short story writer, and his first novel is due, and he will be reading from that. And with him will be, well, we call her Brooke because that's her byline, but she calls herself Bo Bolander, who, as far as I know, has only written short stories, but my...
That is correct.
Yeah. Have you read any of them, Rick?
Yes, I have. They're quite good.
Yeah, they really are. She has quite a voice. I encountered her through my audio editorship for Lightspeed Magazine, where she's had a couple of stories, and one of them that I edited was like an insane Raymond Chandler-esque kind of thing that had a phrase in it like, there were more butts visible in that ashtray than one would find in a strip bar. And just phrases like that. She's a wonderful writer, and this will be her reading debut in New York because she only moved here from the Dallas-Fort Worth area a couple of months ago. So it will be quite an evening, and admission is free. We bother you for donations, but we give away stuff as well. And it's here at 388 Atlantic Avenue, begins at 7 p.m. And for more information on Facebook, you can go to the NYRSF, N-Y-R-S-F, New York Review of Science Fiction Readings group, or go to ourwolf.com and go through the obsolete-looking website until you see about the readings. And all the information, more information than you can possibly want, will be there. Good morning, Rick.
Well, good morning to you.
Thank you. Yes, it's been a long day. I've been heavily immersed in you talking about editing. I am heavily, heavily immersed on two novels and a collection of short stories, all of the, plus the podcasts.
Whose collection?
Women Destroy Science Fiction.
Oh, so it's an anthology, right?
It's an anthology, I shouldn't have said yes. Collection. It's an anthology.
It's become, women destroying, this story that I'm going to read is queers destroying fantasy. You know, it's much harder work being a queer now. I mean, destroying things. And
yeah, well, I actually had a total problem with the concept, I hope John Joseph Adams isn't listening, to Queers Destroy Science Fiction, which I was the audio editor of the podcasts of, because A, and this is a conversation you and I and Sam J. Miller and I and Delaney people. Sort of agreed with me to an extent, is that I've always had a problem with the Q word, because in my day, and no doubt in yours, it was nothing but a derogatory, nasty, nasty phrase synonymous with
bigotry.
Other... But more than bigotry, it begged for violence in the Queens neighborhood where I grew up, where there was a known
well, that is not an uncommon
crossroads.
That is not an uncommon thing that the oppressed take the derogatory term onto themselves. I mean, this happens in other circumstances.
And it does, and then sometimes goes away again.
Right.
It happened for a because of my generation, I have a problem with that word because I'm afraid that it will reverse again at some point. Number two, the whole destroy concept is no, it's create. There was some jackass blogger, apparently, who stated, it was probably Vox Day, I don't know, who said something like, you know, women are destroying science fiction, so that's how the whole destroy thing happened. And so that came there. And number three was in Queers Destroy Science Fiction, most of the stories were fantasy.
Yes, that was strange. And now this story that I'm going to read is in Queers Destroy Fantasy.
Yes.
But yes, I arrived there and discovered it had already been destroyed by all those other queers that had
or whether we're already destroying fantasy. So right. I had problems with, I had no problems with any of the stories. Many
the stories
of them
are fine, and I don't think anyone will pay attention to the labels.
Yeah, I know. But anyhow, the Women Destroy Science Fiction was a special issue of Lightspeed Magazine, and we did
an anthology,
podcasts. But now that we're adding approximately another 25 stories, the rest of the stories from that entire endeavor, and that will be, that's not a podcast,